How long has this been going on?
8 months on Sunday.
Jeez.
Yeah, I told everybody about it at a celebration except for you because except I didn't skip 3 seconds.
Yeah, where were y'all?
Yeah, Jason and I were hiding away under blankets. We were making blanket forts.
That's okay. I didn't see Carl or Jason or Mark hardly at all.
Yeah, I know.
I know, my biggest regret is that we did that. You guys had that fangirl flail, and I was literally right next to the guy recording, and all I had to do was take a half step the other way, and I could have been in the middle of it all. So close. Afternoon, evening, and night. That's right, folks. You are listening to the Star Wars Report podcast, episode number 179. I'm one of your hosts, Mark Herleman, and while I don't have a Blanton backing me up this week, I did call on members of the Star Wars Report 2nd Airborne Division of Podcasts and answer the call they did. That's right, this week we're joined in the Rogue Virtual Studio by the hosts of the Wampa Lair, Carl LeClaire and Jason Hunt, as well as our resident Bothan Queen of the fangirl scene, as well as host of Star Wars Bookworms and Fangirls Going Rogue, Teresa Delgado.
Hello.
All of us at one time, I didn't know what to do.
Yeah. I'm just throwing you all in there, because, you know, that's what this episode is about, you know. When I put the word out there that we were going to have a couple episodes while the Blantons were away, I didn't really know who to get. And I was like, I'm just going to throw it out there and see who all is available. And you guys all answered the call, and I was like, this is working out even better because there were some news topics that I was like, we could have a lot of fun speculating with this if I have enough people. And I know that I got the right people because I've listened to all your shows. Speaking of, though, Teresa, I just want to say thank you real quick to you and Steve for taking over for the last few episodes. We were gone and stuff. Fascinating stuff. Sorry to hear about some of your Twitter exploits and all that with humanity and all that. But I was very interested with the Build-A-Bear topic, especially your little Star Wars bear. How did that go? Did she get the surgery or not?
She had surgery on Tuesday. And I am happy to report the patient is doing well and is less fluffy.
Nice.
Which is good because she's squishy now, you know, and squishy's good when you want to have something to hug on.
Less bounce to her ounce now. She's not so buoyant.
Yeah, it was actually kind of scary. My friend opened her up and then just stuck her hand in there and just started pulling out like huge balls of fluff. And I was like, oh, my God.
Too much. Too much.
But no, she did. She did it perfect. So
nice.
I love her more now.
Nice.
Is that mean?
Carl, Jason, what have you guys been up to?
Oh. Just making millions of listeners happy with the Wampazler podcast.
I wish it was millions. Sorry, did I say that out loud?
It's like 20, 30. So we're fighting the good fight.
Nice. Okay, well, let's just jump right into it. With our first, we've got some news.
We have something to report.
Come closer, I have good news.
Data brought to us by the Bothan spies.
You can send a clear transmission.
There it is. Listen.
All right. Up first, our friends at Jedi News, they got a little tidbit for us. I was kind of blown away by this. I don't know if any of you guys heard this about JJ breaking his back trying to help Harrison Ford. We got Rogue Nation producer J.J. Abrams was a guest on Thursday's episode of The Daily Show, and while he was talking, he was there promoting the Tom Cruise movie. All Jon Stewart wanted to know was about Star Wars, but Abrams didn't reveal anything substantial about The Force Awakens, but he did go on about Harrison Ford. He was talking about how the guy is a real-life superhero. And I love this. He should have a Marvel logo above his name, Abrams says, before calling about what happened to the actor's broken leg in The Force Awakens set last year. He's down there and he's toughing it out, he says. He's a superhuman being. He's literally lying there making jokes, Abrams says. The door has gone down and I'm trying to help lift it up because that's the kind of guy I am. Go, JJ, go. I'm trying to lift up the door and I feel this pop in my back and I'm like, that's weird. Cut to a couple days later, and Abrams finds himself at the doctor's office, and the doctor goes, oh, you have a broken back. He broke his L4 trying to lift the door. Now, I don't know. Have you guys had a chance to see this on the news? I know this one just kind of came out the day we're recording, but I was kind of blown away that they kept that as hush-hush as they did, because when that went down, everybody was like, oh, Harrison Ford, he broke his leg. They're going to have to stop filming. Could you imagine how much worse it would have been if that would have been leaked then?
Oh, my gosh. That would have been crazy.
Everybody would have been calling and saying, oh, the sky is falling. Episode 7 is never going to happen. We're all doomed, you know, to quote 3PO. We're doomed. You know, that's what kind of would have happened.
Yeah, you know what I want to know? Is,
what do you want to know?
I want to know what Steve Glossen thinks. And he's around, Mark.
Is he around?
He is around.
You know, if he was around, like, that would be kind of fun to get his opinion on this kind of stuff, because especially with the later news, there's some topics that are going to be really fun if we have somebody that's a lot of fun to talk about it with.
Hello?
Maybe if I don't say anything, they won't know I'm here.
We don't know. Is he here? Hey, Steve, how's it going, man?
What's up, everybody?
Hey, big thanks again for covering for us on those episodes, man. A lot of fun. Great listening.
Thank you. Thank you. It's all Teresa.
I see how it is. She's throwing it all on your back.
It's all your fault, Teresa.
No.
Teresa's fantastic. Carl, are you still here?
Hey, Steve.
What's wrong?
Hi. Where have you been?
Where have you been?
Where have you been?
Generally, I sit in this chair and talking to a microphone every day.
Well, generally, I sit in this chair and look at pictures of you every day.
I'm talking to you even though you don't answer when I speak.
Well, it's funny because I look at you longingly and forget to send messages. So there's a disconnect.
Disconnect.
Here's the thing. I feel like I'm what you call a low maintenance friend. If I don't hear from you, it doesn't hurt my feelings. But I expect the same thing on the other end. It's like, well, you know, people don't hear from people sometimes. People have lives. And so rather than bother people in their lives, I don't bother anybody. And I feel like when they're ready and need me, boom, I'll be there.
So you're saying in a lot of ways you're like the J.J. Abrams to his Harrison Ford. And when he broke his leg, you just kept your mouth shut about breaking your back?
Yeah. Did J.J. Abrams break his back?
Yeah, that was kind of where we were just talking about that. Yeah, he decided he would hold the Falcon door up while Harrison Ford was breaking his leg and pulled out his L4, which kind of makes you wonder, is the Falcon trying to sabotage the movies?
I mean, look, you know, it's not my fault. It's always the Falcon. try to talk to it, and what do we learn in Empire? It has a very peculiar dialect.
It's the three brains.
which I think 3PO meant, I've been treated like crap by you guys in the cockpit, and now I'm being cussed out by your ship's main computer.
That's what I always thought, too.
This computer is cussing me out, so I'm sure they put the Falcon back together, and it's like, what the hell, bro? Where was I for the last three movies? And JJ was like, well, you showed up in episode 3. Lucas said that is the Millennium Falcon. Oh, you mean that tiny little thing they drew on a screen? That was me? Yeah, I'm breaking your back.
He's like, I remember what you did to the Sundered Heart.
Yeah. You mean the Tantive IV?
Yeah, exactly.
whatever that thing is. Wow, I didn't know that. I haven't read that about old JJ breaking his back.
Yeah, we were wondering, you know, had that little bit of info leaked out at the moment when Harrison broke his leg, would fandom have panicked twice as hard? I mean, I'm kind of on the fence of, yeah, we would have lost our Sith.
I don't know. Yeah, we might have. I think that all of this bodes well for episode 7, to be honest with you.
I think, you know, Batman had his back broken, and look what happened, Darkest Rise. So perfection is can all that can lead from broken backs. That's what I've learned.
Wait a minute. Do you mean like this psychopath took over his place and almost wrecked the legacy of Batman until Bruce Wayne could pull himself together and finally took the psychopath's back, you know, and went to this weird armor, had this weird armor thing going on the whole time? Oh, wait. No, you've never read a comic book in your life.
Steve, that's actually not true. I've been reading comics since October, man.
I hear you, son.
Which comics have you been reading, Carl?
It's like you went to Jocasta New and said, give me some trade paperbacks. You know
what? Yes. Make them omnibuy.
Oh, I love this.
Yeah, she came back to me and she said, you want to go out sometime? I was like, I'm seeing Steve. I can't.
Nice. She's like,
yeah.
And then she was like, if a fatty doesn't appear in our archives, he does not exist. Swarmed off.
I said he just ate the file.
I mean, is she the rudest librarian ever?
She's definitely the coldest.
I don't know. I've met some librarians, and she fits pretty well into the mold. So yeah,
she's like,
I think it depends on how old the librarian is, okay? Because our friend Jonah Marie is a librarian, and she's not mean.
Okay. Well, all I know is she walks up to Obi-Wan, and she's like, do you need some help, Master Kenobi? It's like, and I feel like she, at one point during the deleted scene that was there, as they talked about the lost 20 or the lost 14 or whatever it is, looked at the camera and said, can we get on with this scene, please? And then as soon as she said, it does not exist, like she sharply turns her back to him and turns to that kid. And that kid, you know, he's thinking, oh, God, I hope I filed these books right.
You almost have to wonder if there's a backstory there now in canon where Kenobi's come to the library before and just, like, botched assignments. Oh, great. Look at Kenobi. He's over there trying to find droid repair in the animal section.
No, you know, the guy who's always looking for things that doesn't exist. He's like, Hello there. I'm trying to find information on the Chosen One. We don't have any information. You'll have to talk to Master Yoda. No, I'm sure there's information here. If I tell you you have to talk to Master Yoda, you have to talk to Master Yoda.
Get out of my library.
No books.
No, you know what it was? Obi-Wan probably ate food and stuff in the library and spilled it on stuff.
Oh, that's it.
I can totally see him sitting there with a box of those noodles from Heir to the Jedi and just chatting.
And some Nerf nuggets?
Yeah, some Nerf nuggets and noodles. Noodles and Nerf nuggets. Sitting there chowing down just a big old mouthful. Noodles making slurping noises the whole time. And people going, shh. And he just kind of force waves and I was like, I am not disturbing you. And they're like, that only works on the weak-minded. And he looks back at him and he's like, shh.
Oh, I could see it in a twisted, slightly weird world.
So I didn't know JJ broke his back.
That was pretty much all of us. I think we were all just kind of floored by, like, wow, we sat on that news a while, didn't we?
You say broke his back, like a fracture, like
it's an L4 is what they're saying. Yeah, it's like that does not sound like that would be very comfortable. Yeah, he was holding the door up, and he's sitting there, and he's, as he puts it, I feel this pop in my back, and I'm like, that's weird. Which, yeah. You know, I mean, when you break your back, that's the first thing that comes to everyone. Oh, that's weird.
Yeah, your back, you don't want to mess with your back. It's dangerous territory. The slightest pain just messes up your whole day. And bless his heart. But I do say, you know, look, on the original Star Wars, they had a sandstorm that, you know, that destroyed their whole set. They had to rebuild really quickly. Same thing in The Phantom Menace. To me, George Lucas on A New Hope, I mean, he had to be hospitalized when they finished filming because of stress and all this other stuff. So, it bodes well. I think it bodes well for 7 that they're having these kind of problems.
So does that mean we need to have Mark Hamill break his arm for episode 8?
No, he'll probably be in some kind of car crash between the two.
Okay.
Oh. Knocking on wood.
To get attacked by a snow creature at the start of episode 8.
Right. Yeah.
Get some scars.
get knocked off of some kind of lizard version of a tauntaun.
Well, speaking of Mark Hamill, Dorkly.com has some great little Tops trading cards that he has signed recently. There's about 4 or 5 of them. I put the link in the chat here. I wanted to go over these with you guys because they're just so much fun. The first one here,
yes,
it's got Luke standing. It's the search for Vader. And Hamill writes, this Vader guy is a loser, .. Hope he doesn't have kids. And I just love every one of these has one of those little punch phrases, these little zingers and stuff, but sometimes the card just really plays well. And Luke in this scene, I'm just loving the look on his face. I don't know. It's got like a Game of Thrones feel to it.
That first one's pretty good, but as you scroll through, you know, they're all right. You know, they're okay. There's one where he actually gets the line. Well, there's one, you scroll on through, and it's from the series one of the 1977 cards. A horrified Luke sees his family killed, and he signs, "Well, now I can go to Tashi Station whenever I want."
Yes, yes. And I love the fact that the card does say that, too. A horrified Luke. Like, it doesn't even look that bad. It's like he's pondering, like, this. How can I make this work for my advantage? The other one I like, too, is it shows the evaporator in the background. It is world's largest bong for sale. Call Luke. Like, oh, my God, Hamill. Like, you are pulling no punches here. You are just going for broke.
And then on some of these, he does straight up word bubbles. It's a shot of him from behind looking at the homestead in flames. He says, "Darn it, I told Uncle Owen not to smoke in the house."
The one with the Luke Astritus Tauntaun. You smell something, girl? I kind of hope more of these surface.
These should be in the app.
And speaking of, sorry, that really loud scream was because I've been trying all day to get the new connections card on the Topps app, and I just got it. So
nice.
I was pretty excited.
George Lucas directs his counterpart, Luke. Yes, George, but just try acting to these scripts.
Oh, my goodness. Mark Hamill's a genius.
Yeah, and then there's the last one. This one's probably the best from a legend standpoint. Mark Hamill as Luke Skywalker in A New Hope, a.k.a. Luke Starkiller in The Adventures of Luke Starkiller, as taken from the Journal of the Wills, saga number one, The Star Wars. Like, it's like a half paragraph long, like classic.
I love it. Now I need to get a Mark Hamill autograph because they're all going to be this great, right?
Yeah,
but
that's all
I would want. I need like a Topps card.
Yeah, see, we got the photo with Hamill, and that was awesome. But had I known we could have got this kind of gold on top of that, I'd have paid the money.
He's something else. He's truly a joker. You know what I'm saying?
No! I see what you did there.
Where you at, Carl? Come on, man.
What? I'm sorry, what?
What? I would just
Heath Ledger was a really good Joker.
I'm gonna like throw something at you, Carl.
Agree. How about Jared Leto though, huh? But this is a Star Wars podcast.
Mark Hamill is and forever will be my Joker.
I saw a great
for sure.
I saw a great meme online the other day that showed all the different Jokers. It had Cesar Romero from the 66 Batman. Mm-hmm. It says Cesar Romero, and then underneath his name it says the clown.
Yeah.
Then it showed Jack Nicholson in the gangster, Heath Ledger the anarchist, Jared Leto the psychopath, and then next to all those a big shot of Joker from the animated series, Mark Hamill the Joker.
Yes,
I really appreciated that. I thought that was a good commentary on that. But this is a Star Wars podcast. Am I actually on the podcast? Is that actually what's happening right now?
This is true. This is true. In fact, we're at the big part. The next story actually comes from making Star Wars. It's a rumor, but it's the one I thought we might have the most fun with. And that is the rumor of 3 possible live-action Netflix TV shows coming our way. So I don't know if this is anything that will happen, but the possibility of 3, just 3, when you've got a saga so large, you know, where would you put these 3 and what would they be about? Steve, go.
What now? I wasn't expecting to be the first. I'm still on Disney planning multiple live-action Star Wars shows. I'm reading the article right now to try to... I'm perusing to try to get the information.
Okay, well, then I will start out with a couple. One of the ones that I would love to see is something set kind of more in the Old Republic era. Now, granted, most of the information I have comes from Legends, which does not exist in canon, but it would be cool to see some things taken. They used to have a ship called the Chunthor, which was a Jedi training academy that went through the galaxy and it would pick up students. They would train, they would go to planets and quell rebellions, whatever needed to be. Oh, in a lot of ways, it was like Star Trek The Next Generation Jedi style.
No, it sounds like the second season of Buck Rogers is what it's
That could be too. But that's something that I think about that, whether it be in the Old Republic or in another era. But if they had some kind of a training type show where we saw the Jedi in an era that is new to us, but we see them taking, you know, and doing more of the fundamentals of the Force, you know, the Force training in that regard, kind of like Yoda and Luke on Dagobah, you know, get to that kind of moment and flesh that out. I think that'd be a lot of fun. You know, I think a lot of people are going to think, should we put it post Return of the Jedi? I mean, that would be an era that I think a lot of us are interested in. But at the same time, I think that might be a mistake because the films are going to start fleshing that era out. And maybe you want to leave that hands off. I mean, I don't know. Carl, what do you got? You got any ideas on this one?
Damn. I was trying to collect my thoughts. you know, I'd love a Jar Jar series, mainly for Jason.
Oh, boy.
No, I don't. Oh, man, that's tough. You know, because... it's just hard because when I think of Star Wars TV shows, I used to have all these thoughts about what I'd want them to be. I always thought it'd be really cool to like see like a live action rendition of some of the old Tales books, like Tales of Jabba's Palace, Tales of the Bounty Hunters. Mm-hmm. Remember all those? I thought that could be kind of fun. But what might be neat is just giving us a character we've never met before. And I think, I don't know. Oh, God, I got nothing. This is pathetic. I just haven't had time to think. I don't know, maybe a rom-com of some kind with Daisy Ridley and me figuring life out, you know. It could be like a Boy Meets World rendition in Star Wars or something. Boy Meets British Girl. You know, I think that'd be fun. Steve, where are you on that?
I could see. I mean, I smell what you're stepping in there. I hate that phrase. you're right. You're right. But I think that the first thing that people's minds jump to is the abandoned live action series, which we were told would be grittier and focus on the underworld and all this kind of stuff. And everyone was just all excited about it. And I was like, okay, you know, I'll give it. You know, I'll watch it because it's Star Wars. I think that it would be cool to revisit, now knowing what we know, to revisit something like the Droids series and that sort of thing, where you take characters that we're familiar with but hit them in a time where we're not so familiar with them. You know, with the Droids cartoon back in the 80s, it was obviously it's not canon at all, but it was the idea of, here are these droids, I think before they ever bumped into Luke or that sort of thing. Now that we know kind of their origin stories, that could be done away with. But there are a lot of characters you could follow along. You could do the political show, you know, set in the time of the Old Republic with Bail Organa. You know, you could see something we didn't get to see in Revenge of the Sith, and that's that Council of 2000 or whatever it was called. And you could start to see these people do that, and you could make it almost like a House of Cards, but, in you know, with Star Wars. You could do your underworld stuff if you wanted to with your bounty hunters and everything. And I think that's what most people would like to see, is something like that. Or you could do a rom-com with Daisy Ridley and Carl, where, you know, they're just perusing the sands of Jakku, you know, picking out junk and stuff. And the way they meet is, I've got the first episode right here.
Oh.
They're both scavenging a downed Mon Calamarian ship, not a Star Destroyer, mind you, but one of the Rebel ships, and they both happen upon the same computer technology at the same time. They're not really paying each other attention because they're on the other side of like a wall from each other, but they're both trying to remove the same thing. And they pull and they tug, and then finally one of them wins out, probably Daisy Ridley. and as she pulls, she falls back, Carl falls back, and they look through the hole at each other. And so it starts out with like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you're here. What are you doing? This is my dig. And she's like, no, this is mine. And they go back, and before you know it, they're in love.
Ah,
yeah.
Okay.
This episode. I like that, Steve. I'm going to piggyback off you real quick.
Okay.
I like the idea, though, you know, of, I think it's important that we do have, in some sense, characters that we do feel familiar with to some degree. Mm-hmm. To just give us like a, so I'm gonna go against what I said earlier. You know, just a random brand new character, you know, just because it's in the Star Wars universe doesn't necessarily make it Star Wars. I think it'd be good to at least in some capacity involve characters that we've met before, even in a smaller capacity. I think that it gives it a more grounded feel.
Is there a limit, though, to how far we go? I mean, do we keep Han, Luke, Leia out of the show, or are we okay with maybe a young Han waltzing in, sauntering in, blasting somebody, and walking out the bar with a drink in his hand?
Well, I think that would depend on how well the young Han in the young Han standalone movie works out.
This is true. I know, Steve, you were talking about the possibility of oversaturation with the new Star Wars movies and stuff, and you know, I wonder if this also falls into that realm. I mean, there are fans that love Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. There are fans that hate it. There are fans that like the Daredevil film. There are fans that hate that. You know, do you think that by having it on Netflix that that adds to that potential issue?
Well, you know, obviously the Marvel model comes to mind. I think that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has been hit and miss at best. And I think that Daredevil was a solid television show. I haven't heard anyone that spewed venom all over it. I think there were people that had some problem with the violence and that sort of thing. But I've not heard anyone just hate it. I've heard mostly positive things to come out of it. But you also have to understand you'd be dealing with a completely different creative team. Marvel and Lucasfilm have nothing to do with each other outside of those comic books. And so, you know, it wouldn't be Jeff Loeb running things. It'd be someone completely different running things on that side. In my mind, it's like you need to tap Dave Filoni to head up. If you're going to do television series, then you need to tap Dave Filoni to do this, because he gets Star Wars in a way that no one else that's there right now, save maybe a Pablo Hidalgo or a Larry Kasdan, gets Star Wars. And I don't know what that noise was. And so I think the idea would be, you know, how connected into everything else do you want it to be? There's that noise again.
They're just blowing my brain, man.
They've made it very clear that their focus moving forward wants to be on the original trilogy time period and what is to come here with this sequel trilogy and stuff. And so I don't know that they're going to be willing to delve back into the prequel era. I'm afraid that until the generation that has grown up with the prequel era kind of comes into their own as the creative people who start to get jobs with Lucasfilm and start to get jobs at Disney, I'm afraid that prequel era is going to be something we don't really get to revisit, my Atlanta, and for the next, you know, for the next 7 or 8 years or so. And so if they did some shows, I feel like it'd be more along the lines of, you know, stuff that's happening just off screen during Empire Strikes Back. You know, we may see something in that Shadows of the Empire time, something between Empire and Shadows, or something between A New Hope and Empire. You know, everyone's clamoring for this Boba Fett thing. Everyone wants to spend time with Boba Fett.
I don't.
I don't either. Not
I
mean, if it's
I do.
It's what? Maura Morrison.
Wow.
Give me back the real Boba Fett.
Who is that?
The guy who played him. Jeremy Bullock. Well, not Jeremy Bullock specifically. He's too old. But the guy who does the voice in the original Empire. Not some random New Zealander.
Oh, wait.
That's hateful.
It's not hateful.
That's racist.
It's not racist. I just like
how
the original.
Instead, we just go with Darth Maul and just get Ray Park. And then everybody's happy. See?
There is something to that, because in canon, all we know about Maul is he went off with the Mandalorians that are loyal to him. I mean, that is a big plot point that we could wrap up. I guess that's the real question I have next for you guys is, do we make it relevant in the terms of it needs to be something that's going to add to materials coming down the line or materials that are already out? Or do we create something completely new to help grow the universe?
Well, if they're talking about doing three of them, is what you said, Mark, I think they can do a bit of both. Personally, I'd love to see – and this will make you happy, Mark. I'd love to see a Rogue Squadron TV TV series. I think that'd be fun. But one of the other things I think would be interesting is, you know, and this may not be feasible because of the amount of money that it would end up having to be, but maybe do something with Yoda. Maybe just a couple hundred years before the prequels, you know, not in his youth, because I think I don't want to see too much of his origin, but you know, maybe see what he does to get on the Jedi Council sort of thing. Maybe follow Yoda, you know, at age 400 rather than 800. You know,
when 540 years old you reach, look this pimpin', you will not.
Well, before I go there, I never said like what I wanted to see, and I want an Ewok show.
An Ewok show, post post Return of the Jedi, or
it could be even like before Return of the Jedi, and then kind of encompass in Return of the Jedi, but from the Ewok's perspective, you know, and then like after, because we have to see Wicket get married and all that stuff.
Well, what if we see like the Ewoks take an evolutionary step, and now like they're considered equals of everyone else, and they're the new mini Wookiees of technology, and they actually became a founding force of the rebellion after what they did. I don't know. I mean, Ewoks the cartoon shows that they're capable of quite a few things.
They are. They can be X-wing pilots.
Well, my only thing is, I think people would look and say, "Well, we've done this before. We had the Ewok adventure." And the Battle for Endor back in the 80s. And, you know, those things were what they were. I loved them. Still do to this day. But you know, it's I don't know. I don't know. I don't want to see my Ewoks speaking English, for one thing.
No, you didn't like Bosk?
Do what's that?
Bosk in the Clone Wars?
Right, right.
All of a sudden, it sounds like a snake.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
They could pull a Lobaka and give him little translator droids.
He says, hey. Your skin smells like it tastes good.
Mm. What?
Ewoks, cannibals.
Okay. In all seriousness, though, I think I like a lot of y'all's ideas for a show. I still really like the idea of kind of focusing on some of the characters we see in the background, and maybe each episode being a different character, and then somehow they kind of tie together. But I think the only person who could do that is Dave Filoni. Not necessarily just bounty hunters or dark side characters, but pretty much anyone.
Hondo.
I think it'd be kind of cool. Hondo. Oh, can we have a Hondo show?
Hey, that would be a fun underworld.
I would love that.
Or an all droid show? Just kidding.
I mean, you know, I honestly think that if they are going to do something like this, and again, as you said, Mark, it's just a rumor, but I honestly think if they're going to do something like this, they'll end up going the bounty hunter route one way or the other.
Yeah, you see in Boba and his group, maybe see Boba leave the group eventually, you know, after reading Dark Disciple. Bounty hunters show up in that, and I could see a story set around a certain group of bounty hunters in that regard, especially if, say, Boba Fett happened to be the heart of the story. I mean, I'm kind of with you guys. I'm kind of over Boba Fett, but at the same time, I'm like, if they tell the story right, I could be back into Boba Fett.
Yeah, you know, to get on a side tangent real quick, I was always a huge Boba Fett fan. And then when they gave him his clone origin in Attack of the Clones, I was like, what are you doing? And then the way they've just overused Boba Fett has made me like him less. I actually feel like the EU novels, Legends, did a way better job of giving us Boba Fett than anything we're getting right now. Like the oversaturation of Boba Fett in every comic, like every new Star Wars comic that Marvel's given us. It's like, oh, Boba Fett's going after Luke now. It's like, what? No, shut up. Like, it's just too much. Like, I used to love Boba Fett, and like they're giving me too much of him.
Well, see, the Untold Clone Wars panel at Star Wars Celebration Anaheim started to wet my whistle for Boba Fett when we saw the behind-the-scenes stuff with him and Cad Bane. When Filoni had mentioned, you know, Cad takes Boba under his wing because he had an ongoing bet with Jango over who was the best, and they never really could settle that. And so he wanted to train Boba to be just as good as Jango was so he could end that debate for all. that really got me excited for Boba, because, I mean, the whole concept of him being a clone was weird. And then the way Legends handled it, they had that Young Boba Fett series where he had Django's diary, the journal, taught him how to be a bounty hunter. And then that kind of got, like, retconned out of there as well. And you're like, wait, what's going on with Boba? So it would be cool if they were to do it right. You know, give you a nice solid story that makes him the hard killer that we thought he was originally. But it gets to that realm of, you know, is that going to be a plot you would use in the underworld? And then you think, well, you got the three films. Do you make one dark, one kid friendly, and one that ties into the other stuff? I mean, you've got a couple different directions you could go with this.
I've never been like a huge fan of Boba Fett, but I know there's a big draw with him, at least, you know, among the Star Wars faithful. I don't know how popular he is in the old GP, as Steve likes to say, the general public. That'd be interesting to see. So, I don't know.
Yeah, I know one thing for sure. If this ever happened to be some truth to the matter, I'm going to lose a lot of hours of my life to Netflix again. I'm already losing hours to Spartacus, other shows that I'm catching up on. I'm like, I need to be doing other things, but, you know.
But Netflix.
Yeah, exactly, man. You've got Star Wars, the Clone Wars, you've got the movie on there already. I would love to see more Star Wars on Netflix in general, so that couldn't possibly be a bad thing. But I stop and I question what Steve had mentioned before about that oversaturation. I've been thinking about it a lot, Steve. And I mean, that is the one thing that the EU suffered from, was so many books so fast with so much stuff not really connecting. It's like, you know, you've got a recipe here that we could have something very similar in 10 to 15 years' time.
I think the difference, though, in producing these visual mediums versus novelizations and that sort of thing is that I think it comes down to quality. Let's be honest about something really quickly. With the EU, toward the end, especially. And by the end, I mean the last, gee whiz, few years.
Four.
It was very hit and miss. And I think that if you're producing quality television, quality films, then it's going to be hard to oversaturate. It's when they start trading in quality for quantity that you're going to see the idea of oversaturation become a thing, because we'll just get tired of it. I don't know. It's an interesting thing that happens, and Disney's got, you know, $4 billion they got to make back, guys. So no matter what this movie does when it comes out, Disney's still going to be in the hole by a few billion. I mean, unless this thing just blows everyone's mind and does $4 billion in the theaters, they're still going to be behind the eight ball on what they spent to acquire these licenses.
Right.
So, you know, so they're obviously trying to get things out there and keep this brand evergreen, keep it alive, because that's now how they're looking at it. They're, as much as we love Disney, and Teresa and I, we love Disney. As much as we love Disney, they're still a business, they're still a corporation, and they're still looking at this not so much as an art and storytelling form, but they're looking at it as, this is a brand that we need to make money with. And everything else they've tried in the science fiction genre, or something could be considered science fiction genre, by and large has failed for them, whether it's the John Carter, whether it's the Tron, you know, as far back as the Black Hole. And this is a brand that they feel like they can really sink their teeth into and really put their marketing machine behind to really generate some major profit for Disney. But until they reach that point where, like, all right, we've finally broken even on the buyout, then I think we're going to see them trying to come up with as many ways as they can to have that out there for us.
Yeah. And I'm a little less concerned about oversaturation, especially if it's going to be more in this visual medium, because I think Star Wars works best as a visual medium. Mm-hmm. I love the novels. I love the comics. I'm actually getting more into collecting some of the books and stuff now that we have the new canon going on. But if it's the visual medium, I loved the Clone Wars. I'm loving Rebels. If we get another TV series, that to me is more Star Wars even than the books that I'm reading, because, you know, while I'm loving the books, and Lords of the Sith was amazing, I would love to see an adaptation of that turned into a movie or something. It's still rings more true to me when it's when I'm watching it. And so if I'm watching it, to me, that's I don't care how much I get. I just want more. So.
Well, and the books accompany, you know, the visual. I mean, Dark Disciple, like when I'm reading the characters in that, I'm hearing their voices from the TV show. You know, when I hear Mark Thompson read it, I'm like, it's not so – I mean, he doesn't quite capture them the same. But when I'm reading it just from the page, I'm like, I've got that visual to go with it. And I think all your casual fans, it's very easy to get somebody to sit down and watch a movie. Get them to grab a book and read it from end to end, not so easy. And I think that that's going to be the biggest thing when it comes to bringing money back into Disney's pocket. That's going to be the thing that they're going to really be able to capitalize on. But it also, you get away from that risk of, well, we've got all these kids' books out here and nobody bought them. And then we've got all these junior adult books and nobody bought them. And we've got these books over here and 25 people bought them. And you don't really have that risk with like stuff on Netflix and movies and things like that. Because even if people aren't going to the theater, they're waiting for it to come out on Blu-ray, DVD, and they're going to get it and watch it then. So they're still making that money in some form or some fashion. But the books, I think there's a lot of risk out there with the books and the comics. You know, you pick an artist for a comic, for example, and their art style is deemed too gritty or mashed potato face, you know, and then suddenly everybody's just like, well, you know, this would be a good story if I could get around that. And I don't know. When you've got the live action aspect, they want it to look good. They want it to look real. You know, they want to take that extra attention to the detail, and the dollars are in the detail.
Yeah.
I don't know. For me, like, live action exists in the films. You know, on TV, I actually quite enjoy having animated series, so it makes me a little bit nervous. But this is also, as we said, a rumor, and it's also a rumor that they would even do three in the first place.
Yeah.
So. Right. You know, I would say let's start with one and see how that goes. but I don't know. It's just I feel like a live action TV show might be something that takes away from the films. And that's just me thinking, like, just as a fan, you know, nothing else. I just feel like it might take away from it because they're movies. Like, that's movies are cinematic for a reason. You know, I'm not necessarily sure I really want it on TV.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Well, and if you go from three to one, I think at that point it becomes, well, does Underworld then become the obvious choice since they were so close to already having it out there?
Maybe. I mean, they said they had, what, 60 hours worth of scripts or something like that already, you know, in the can.
Yeah.
So maybe.
I mean, Star Wars, it's so diverse. When it comes to legends and stuff, I always ask somebody when they're like, well, what book should I read? It's like, well, what do you like about Star Wars? You know, because I wouldn't take somebody that likes Mandalorians and I read the Darth Bane books. You know, those will be good for you. You know, so it's like, what would be the one thing that all Star Wars fans would be like, that's what we need to see? Like, I don't think there's an obvious answer for it.
Well, I think not an obvious one, but I think at least when it comes to Star Wars doing anything live action, and especially a television program, is that it has to have that element of Star Wars, which to me is like, it's like that sense of wonder, that sense of mythology. You know, if you do a Star Wars show, you know, I'm not like, not hammering your idea, Steve, but you know, let's say you did something like very political, like in the Senate, and you turned it into a House of Cards type thing. Well, is that really Star Wars? I mean, just because it's in the Star Wars universe, is that still Star Wars? I think what makes Star Wars Star Wars is that it's always a mythological story. There's always this sense of wonderment to it that is very otherworldly. It's not like your typical – it's not just another sci-fi show or another fantasy show. It's something else. It's something distinct. And I think if you're going to make a live-action show, it has to have that element. And that's what Rebels has done and continues to do. That's what Clone Wars did, is it captured that – like that sense of wonder that is Star Wars. It's not just some like fun adventure show. There's something a little bit more to it. There's always that little bit of depth. And I think that's all that's really necessary to make a successful live action show.
Well, it's interesting too, because you use Rebels and the depth. And I was thinking, you know, one of the things I would like to see is travel from more than one planet. But Rebels kind of has stuck to the one planet, and they've proven that that too can be a working scenario. So, I mean, the sky's the limit. That's the one cool thing about Star Wars, especially right now with canon being reset. There's so much story potential, so many opportunities, not just for characters, but for planets and for bigger backgrounds going on. There could be whole factions out there that we do not know of right now. And that's kind of intriguing.
Well, I want to go back to what Carl said. He talked about Star Wars and being mythology. And I think that's one of the dangers we get into when we say, well, we want to see a Yoda origin story. We want to see a Boba Fett origin story. We want, even though we've seen that, we want to see this. We want to see that. We want to see this. And I think the idea is that in mythology, a lot of times you don't get all those little details and all those little answers, you know. And that's one of the things that make it mythological is with that mythology, there is legend attached. And legend has these overarching archetypes. It has these overarching stories where the minute details don't matter. It doesn't matter that a parsec is a unit of distance, not a unit of time. What matters is that the Millennium Falcon is the fastest hunk of junk in the galaxy. And it doesn't matter how Yoda came into the council. What matters is he is the greatest Jedi master that's alive at the time that we see him. And those things add to the mystery, which adds to the grandness of the mythology. And so, I mean, Carl, I think it's a valid point, and I think we've got to be careful. And I think that's one of the things that the EU kind of fell into a trap. When you start getting into 9-book series and 20-book series, you end up in a situation where you're describing every little tiny detail. You're describing every little thing. And in some cases, not leaving much to the imagination. We never needed, you know, the question in Star Wars was never, how do they go to the bathroom? Anyone asking that question was asking it as a joke and leaving it at that. But in these books, we're like, well, so-and-so was in the fresher. Oh, my gosh. Who cares? You know? Who cares?
He's taking a sonic shower.
It's the mundane that will drag down the mythology. It's the mundane that'll cause the legend of it all to be tarnished. And I think that when you start, I think that's the danger when you start getting into television shows like this. And so maybe we do want to visit characters we've never met before. Maybe we want to be in a situation where they're talking about Jedi in hushed tones and awed reverence, or in some cases maybe even disgust, you know. Maybe we want to see the formation of a rebellion, you know, further in different pockets of the galaxy. I don't know. I just know that you've got to continue to have that type of mythological feel to it, and it'll always feel like Star Wars.
Well said. Well, folks, that puts a wrap on this week's episode of the Star Wars Report podcast. We'd like to thank everyone for listening. A special thanks to our Patreon sponsors out there. We hope everyone's enjoyed this week's episode. Remember, you can find all our past episodes of all the Star Wars Report websites, 2nd Airborne Division of Podcasts, at www.starwarsreport.com/podcastnetwork. Now, remember, you can find us on Twitter and on Facebook. Now, guys, gal, let's let the listeners know where they can find and follow each of you. Carl?
Oh, Wampa's Lair. Oh, great. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/Wampa's Lair. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/Wampa's Lair.
Excellent. Teresa?
Everywhere, but you can find me and everything I do on my Twitter at Ice Cold Penguin. Shows I'm on, Disney Vault Talk, Star Wars Bookworms, Fangirls Going Rogue, Fangirl Chat. So you can find all those on iTunes.
Nice. Steve?
I'm not online ever.
This was a rare fluke.
Is this online? I'm sorry. Are we on the internet right now?
Yes.
I've got to go. No, geekoutpodcast.com. That's all the shows in the Golaverse. Everything from Geek Out Loud, the flagship show, to Disney Vault Talk with myself and Teresa, to Know What I'm Saying sometimes with Carl.
It's coming back. Don't worry.
Carl! Carl! I sound like freaking Rick from The Walking Dead sometimes.
Carl!
I'm so sad that he's not around. Geekoutpodcast.com is where you go to find all that stuff. We're on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter at Golaverse, G-O-L-verse. And you'll get all the information about all the other stuff that way.
Nice. And Jason, anything else from you, my man?
Well, obviously I'm at Wampa's Lair with Carl, but I also host a Doctor Who podcast for those interested called Talking Time Lords. So you can look up Talking Time Lords on Facebook, Twitter, and that sort of thing.
Who would have thought? So that does it for this episode. And remember, many Bothans died to bring you this podcast.
Oh my gosh, you and that little robot.
Oh yeah. And if you knew the technical difficulties I had tonight, oh boy. Whew. Fun.
Fun.
Well, guys, I appreciate it very much. Steve, thanks for coming in last minute like that, man. Really helped out.
No problem. I don't have a life.
Well, we appreciate that.
So, are we hanging up now? Because I don't have a life.